Well, here we are down in the South Pacific tonight, bringing our show live to you from the South Pacific, somewhere out on the ocean where nobody can find us. There's tropical birds all around. You're going to hear them in the background tonight. We are surrounded in a jungle with many, many different kinds of birds. It's just a beautiful environment. Tonight we got my sidekick night. Steve Barish is on, and we're going to be discussing last week's show and the weeks before that show, which I prepared for it because Steve hasn't been on with me for a while, and we've been discussing electronic harassment, CIA satellites like the newer ones, the H-1011, which was launched in 1990 by STS-36. We have been talking all along about angel dust being pipiridine being in drugs like Paxil. We discussed the shooting in Illinois. We with Dr. Colin Ross last week, who's got several books out on the subject, and he's a medical doctor and a psychiatrist. He works in three big hospitals around the country, including one out here in California. We were talking about Stephen Kaczmarek and his problem with Paxil, and it seems like some of Dr. Fred's stuff he's been talking about are getting a very high credibility, scientific opinion, approval on all the crazy things we've been saying. So, Steve, how's it going, man?
Pretty good, Fred. I've been really studying this work, and it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, isn't it?
It's really very, very interesting. I remember we were talking about this before, and everything that Dr. Ross has said, you told me before, which is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and if you go to type in Colin Ross on the search engine, you'll see who this guy is. He's got his own institute. And we're going to be carrying his books about the CIA, interfering with American, treating American like guinea pigs, and his other book, Moonshadows, the new one, which is a psychology and therapy of healing children. We're going to be carrying those books at Paradigm at a slight discount from the retail price. I'll have those up pretty soon. And his helpers was out this week, so she couldn't get the books shipped out here yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have that. And then we got a real interesting guest coming up on April 1st, which I'll talk about at the end of the show. So anyhow, how's everything been going over on the Saturday night end of the show here?
I've been doing really well, Fred. I did a lot of psychic work last weekend on a client that was really in bad shape, and she came through quite well, and I put her back on her track, and I had about five or six other phone calls, so it really, really went very well. Thanks for asking.
Oh, cool.
That's great. Yeah, the work's getting better.
So and what do you think about the, what's your take on all this big pharma drug stuff?
Well, Fred, to be honest with you, I listened to both your shows. And it's absolutely amazing that they're doing what they're doing. I mean, to control people's minds, it's just absolutely amazing. And I think the big thing that I was really interested in is the way that they're doing things through angel dust and controlling and drugs. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And it's just really scary. I mean, MK Ultra, Manchurian Candidate type things.
Yeah, Project Artichoke. Yeah, the Manchurian stuff is real interesting.
Oh, it's incredible.
You can have up. In fact, I got some emails from people after that show. One person had, I think, 14 different personalities.
Oh my gosh!
Worked for the government, been a victim or something, and they were reporting into me to tell me about their experience. You know.
Well, I think the amazing thing was, one thing that you and Dr. Ross were talking about was that the CIA can alter personalities, I mean, just by using these drugs. It's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, they
and
use
the FDA is suppressing the placebos and the actual drugs, and the placebos were working just as well as the drugs.
Yeah,
and, it's just incredible what Dr. Ross was saying.
There's layering on as far as psychological profiling and environmental. You know, when they were talking about this waterboarding. Waterboarding where they put you somewhat upside down and pour water over your face and some of it gets in your nose. It's a joke next to what they did in the Manchurian Candidate program on Project Artichoke and some of those other ones. I mean, that's just...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's really incredible the way that they treat these people. And I guess from what I understand, from what I'm hearing now, with the satellites, the Manchurian Candidate is old-fashioned compared to these new satellites that they have.
Yeah, with the Neurophone design, neurophonic stuff, where they're using two beams coming
yes.
down from satellite. Well, first of all, they have to find you. First of all, what happens is the Project Echelon
right.
Is where they're listening to us right now, obviously, and then when every email you've been sending all day and I've been sending is goes into Echelon in one room.
Right.
And then it's broken down by these super Cray computers. That's just way beyond that. And so out of that, the profiling takes place.
Mm-hmm.
Once the profiling takes place, then what they do is they'll start, they can use your receiver on your phone when it's hung up. They can use your cell phone in your pocket when it's not turned on because it has an electromagnetic microphone.
Right.
So they listen to that. Usually that's localized surveillance equipment. It's probably around your house or somewhere.
Right,
and then
right.
from that, they get your pulse rate and your heartbeat. And everybody has a different, you know, it's like you have fingerprints. Everybody has a slightly different pulse rate and a slightly different heartbeat.
Right.
So they're able to combine the two, the pulse and the heart together, you know, kind of get the
amazing.
Heart rate and the, you know, the pulse rate.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to heterodyne that into a formula so they're not, now they can find you anywhere they want. Wherever you happen to be, they can find a person with that heartbeat, and that, and they can find you through a building or through a cement, 10 feet of cement.
Amazing.
Yeah, because the infrared and stuff, and how that way that works. So then what they do is then you're put into a satellite system, and you become a guinea pig. Now, they're not picking on people that are terrorists or mm-hmm. any of that sort of thing. They're not looking to do anything with them. They already know their mindset. They're looking for Americans that don't know what's going on, to see how they can screw with your head.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
they have another box that was developed a few years ago, back in the 60s. Dr. Shulman, I believe it was. Now I have my notes in front of me, but he first started putting electrodes in animals and controlling with a little radio control box like you fly an airplane.
Right.
And then what happened was they started doing human subjects, and now they can control you with a little box, you know, just like they did the animals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they really got into that, the real foundation of that program was back when they were training dolphins, if you remember, to go
right.
out and put bombs on ships. Remember that?
Yes, I remember that.
Well, that was the genesis of that program, and then, of course, it spread to humans, and that was quite a while ago. So this has been going on, and it's very sophisticated. You know, I've been studying all the way back to days of satellites back when I was really amazed. I'm studying some books right now on the early days of the U-2, Utility 2 spy plane, and
mm-hmm.
when Bissell was the head of the CIA, and Edwin Land was the owned the Polaroid camera in 19. You know, he started the Polaroid company developing polarization of film when he's 19 years old. And he pretty much, him and a couple other guys, you know, him and what's his name, Kelly Johnson, who was the one that picked out Area 51, they pretty mm-hmm. much, and Bissell, And a young general named Shriver pretty much ran the CIA back when Eisenhower was in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And of course, that sort of came to an end with the U-2 stuff came to an end on the 26th flight, the 24th flight when Francis Gary Powers crashed. I think it was May 7th, 1957, I believe it was, somewhere back then.
Right, right.
Meanwhile, they were trying to put up a, than the Corona Project, they were trying to put anything in orbit, retrieve it, you know. But remember,
mm-hmm.
they used to have the planes fly out over the ocean with the big nets behind them to catch a satellite.
Right, right.
Well, along about that time, I didn't know it, but a couple of my, you know, what the CIA used to do in those days is they had about $100 million in funds. They didn't have to account to the GAO office, Government Accounting
mm-hmm.
Office, at all.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they hire different people to go out and start businesses, just go out and go rent a shop and hire some guys. They don't know what they're going to do, and then we'll make a business out of this. And that business, of course, is getting its money from the CIA until they get further along, and then you know, people don't even know what they're doing. I mean, you know, they're doing
right,
a project,
right.
They don't know who it's for, except
right.
the main guy does. And this went on. It was really funny because up on BBS Radio, I have all my books back from the 60s when I used to call on all these companies.
Right.
You know, that where I'd call on them, and I was hitting, you know, electronic engineers and the owners and directors, science directors, and giving them all the instrumentation and working on their experiments with them. Well, I found out later, I just found out recently, a bunch of those companies that are listed in my book were all CIA-funded, and I didn't even know it.
Wow.
So I guess and they were buying from me, so I guess I was, in the end, getting a lot of CIA money in my own pocket.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, that's
you know,
wild.
I wonder. I knew one of the clients was Perkin Elmer, you know, and they were over here in Santa Ana, and they were building cameras, it was really, you know, spy cameras, and it was really interesting because I go into their place. They were over here in Santa Ana on Warner Street, and I go in there, and there was a big dump, you know, because a lot of new companies were starting up here in Orange County, and they had really beautiful. Beautiful facilities, but not a whole lot of money. You know, they buy minimal stuff because their money was going into, you know, the beauty of the company and what they were doing.
Right.
Places like Perkin Elmer and iTech, which is over in Boston, which I used to go, which is a main player.
Yes.
They're all run down, beat up joints, but they sure had the money to spend. You know what I mean? I swear to God, Perkin Elmer was a horrible, dirty old place. And those guys would spend $500,000 with me in a minute on equipment.
Wow.
And that's a lot of money in those days. That'd be like, you know, $5 million today.
I did a lot
of orders like that with them, and there were several others, you know. So it was really interesting to find out now because of some releases. What I've done is I've been studying the curator over at the NSA and CIA library.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been
getting
some books out the back door over there that are available now through Amazon, different places. And then I've been talking to some people. This is all based on the research on my new book, The Inside Track.
Right, right.
Because normally my books mostly center around my work, and they go lightly on the government, and they go lightly on the politics. That's all my books have been that way up till now. This one's not that way. This one is detailed to the gnat's butt, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And facts. There's going to
be
there's nothing left, no stone unturned in this new book, Inside Track.
Great.
So, and the research now of where these programs, and other people... We're telling people, okay, here's a beam coming down in your head, and this guy's over here, the remote control, controlling your head. We don't want you just to read that. We want you to know the story behind it, from what year and what program and what person, and you know what I mean?
Yes.
That's why I'm getting so detailed in the research, and I'm uncovering stuff that's even amazing me, and I was realizing I was part of some of this and didn't even know it.
Right.
You know, so that's what's been going on over here. It's been, amazing. Learning all this stuff.
You know, when Dr. Ross and you were talking, you guys were really picking up on Paxil, and it's just amazing.
Yeah.
I guess there's a little black box on the side that said it can become homicidal.
It's called homicidal ideation. Effexor has that same, Effexor and Paxil both.
Right.
Now, Eric Harris was strung out on Effexor up there at Columbine.
Okay.
But the newest guy, Stephen Kazmanak, was strung out on Paxil. And it's really funny because this guy that works on my roof, his wife recently, I've known this guy, he's an alcoholic and he cannot drink. He spent 5 years in jail because of violence. He was a middleweight boxer and very good. He would have been a world champion if he didn't have a alcohol problem. So he went to jail quite a while ago, spent about 5 years, came back out, and his wife stayed with him for a while and then took off with their 9-year-old son down to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So he works on my roof now, but he's been a friend for 25 years. I've known him since a kid. He's sober now, but he got real depressed. Now, he's been very fine. I've seen him for the last 3 years. He's made good money. He's got his own business going in roofing and contracting. Made great progress like a lot of recovered alcoholics do, and I say recovered because he is, but now he's got depressed over... he's gotten depressed over the fact that his wife took off with some guy and moved to Florida with his son. He has to go through the process, the legal process, to get a restraining order to get the kid back here because it was illegal to do that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
He did. He's supposed to have joint custody. And so he went over to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist doesn't know his profile like I do. And guess what drug he's on? Paxil.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah, and this guy will kill somebody, because he used to do it without drugs. I mean, he would get in a bar and take the whole bar apart. He's a little guy, but he's a fighter. I mean, this guy is a killer.
Right.
And he'd take martial artists and mow them down like a lawnmower. This guy is tough.
Wow.
He weighs about 175 pounds, and he benches over 500 pounds. He's all muscle. That's wow. almost twice his weight, 2.5 times his weight. I can't even lift my own weight, let alone 2.5 times. And now he's on Paxil, and Mikel and I have been watching him. He's been over here a couple times. Mm-hmm. He's changing. He's getting really weird now. He's going back
to...
He might as well be on alcohol, because you know, he's going to explode. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what happens to these people.
Yeah.
And that, and he's the, you know, some people, you could probably get something with it, something out of it in their, it's an SSRI inhibitor, but this is the wrong person to put on it. I guarantee you, something's going to happen because of this. I told him to get the hell off of that stuff, but he is not doing it. You know?
Well, I guess the bad part is it's very dangerous with alcohol, extremely dangerous.
Yeah, but actually, yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly, with alcohol. Yeah, you got it, yeah.
Right, it's really, really dangerous. Matter of fact, it really affects the brain terribly.
Yeah, well, that was the problem that we had back when I had my, when I ran this drug rehab program with Dr. Harvey Rose. We had heroin, cocaine, crystal meth wasn't around. They hadn't invented that one yet. We had, mm-hmm. you know, cocaine that you smoke, what do they call it? There's a word for it, freebase,
mm-hmm.
heroin, angel dust. Let's see, what else did we do? And heroin, angel dust. And it was opium.
Is it
opium
LSD?
Wasn't a big deal, but the heroin and angel dust were, and the smoking the coke was. There's one other drug that we were, I forget what it was.
LSD.
Well, no, acid wasn't a big thing in those days.
Okay.
I don't remember. It was one other drug that people were taking at the time, but it wasn't. Oh, Quaaludes, I think it was.
Oh, Quaaludes. Okay.
Yeah, and we were getting them off all this stuff. Sometimes we put the heroin addicts on Quaaludes to get them off of it, but that was kind of funny. But you know, because heroin's a lot worse. But normally we use Darvon to step them down.
Yeah.
That was the drug of choice to step them off of heroin until they went sober.
Right, right.
And we could get about 30%, you know. This is before California had the drug program. Now they have the drug court. So, you know, if you get busted too many times with drugs, then they put you in a drug court. They monitor you 3 times a week. And that's how it's done now out here in California. But
right.
This is before all. They didn't have any of that in those days.
Right.
So
right,
I was one
right.
of the earlier groundbreakers on that. By the way, anybody listening out there, if you want to call, this is a call-in show tonight. When I have these doctors and stuff on, usually they're not a call-in show. And if somebody wants to call in, the numbers are, in the USA, it's 877-876-5227. USA, Canada is 888-815-9756. And the direct line is area code 530-876-3222. If anybody wants to share your experiences or experiences with kids or adults or anything with drugs, you know, feel free to call us while we're talking about all this stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fred, you and the doctor were talking about also LSD, and that was actually found by accident?
Yeah, Albert Hoffman in 1947, off a rye mold.
Right.
Discovered that. It's similar to psilocybin. But it's a lot stronger, and
mm-hmm.
and it has a prolonged effect on the brain. Now, some people it doesn't have a big effect, and others it has a monumental effect.
Mm-hmm.
Depends
mm-hmm.
on the membrane chemistry of the gray matter of the brain and the synapse.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
If a person doesn't have the proper oils in their body and the insulation and the myelin sheaths are worn down, the acid's going to have a negative effect on them. It's going to make them get a little crazy.
Yeah, the myelin sheath is so important because it surrounds the nerves.
Yeah, exactly, and it keeps the nerve signals from going from one nerve circuit to another, which causes
right.
tinnitus or ringing of the ear.
Yes.
So it's very important to have that myelin sheath. I take PC lecithin myself. When you're under high stress, like, you know, I am under that all the time because I run pretty much around the clock and I
right.
have to report to at least 50 different people that I'm working with weekly, so and be responsible to them for different things we're doing together. So, I mean, that does put a little bit of pressure on you, and I enjoy it. But
yeah.
I also take a heck of a lot of oil for it. I take flaxseed oil, vitamin E, large amount. And lecithin, primrose oil. All those things, omega-3s, omega-6s now, omega-7s that are out there now,
mm-hmm.
one called MAN. It's, there's amazing products that are out there now.
Yeah, I've been taking your
morning.
I've been taking your vitamins and your minerals. They're absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Just fabulous.
They're really good. And we're
fabulous.
Working on a sports drink now for Pete Carroll over at USC. It's going to be like our Pirlo, but obviously the Pirlo is too concentrated and too strong. If you take a bunch of that Pirlo, like a drink a bottle of it, you're going to be on a, you're going to, you might as well just, you know, you're going to have a lot of speed going on in your system. The
right.
way it reacts, it makes you go real right. fast for quite a while, and that's not really healthy. So we're diluting it down into a Gatorade tasting kind of a drink right now. We're working on
right.
that. I'm working on with one of my best friends who helped create the vitamins in the Pirlo in the first place.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, something interesting that really struck me was also Zoloft. You were talking
about Zoloft.
Yeah,
I know what Zoloft is. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really incredible of how dangerous that stuff is.
Same thing. It's an SSR reuptake inhibitor. Now, what happens is when people start getting stressed out, okay? When they start getting stressed out, they use up their serotonin, and the serotonin acts as like a fight or flight drug. You know, when you're a natural hormone, actually, I should say, in your body, it's considered a drug externally taken, but
right.
When you're a kid, when you're a child, serotonin is highly present on the receptor sites of the brain to shield the body from, like, the parents, you know, stress. Like, if
right.
your parents are fighting, you know, and you're a kid and you're, like, 3 years old, it's, like, loud, and it just penetrates you. I remember this would happen when I was a kid. I would never forget that. But when you take it enhances your, it desensitizes your very enhanced bio system. But when you get older, you automatically get desensitized by the way life works under normal stress. So what happens is, like, when you take LSD, it puts you back to when you were 2 or 3 years old as far as your sensitivity goes. You can look at a plant and see the veins in it and figure out the energy of it. You can feel the energy.
Yep.
And so what happens is when they start giving you these drugs, it desensitizes you even more than you were as a child. I mean, as you got older, it kind of like reverses the aging process to a degree, but it also oversensitizes you at some point. And that's where the danger comes in. First, it desensitizes you so that you're not depressed. You follow me?
Right, right.
Then what happens is they keep pouring this stuff on, and this angel dust effect kicks in. And now you become super sensitized.
Right.
And it's that point that you snap that you become dangerous. And nobody knows, everybody's going to have a different snapping point. You see what I mean? That's where
yes.
you become, and see, they don't have a scale to determine how much of this drug, this tranquilizer, they can put in your body before it makes you turn into a freak. You know what I mean? You just get become paranoid and completely lose it. You follow what I'm saying?
Right.
And that's
right,
when the
right.
homicidal, suicidal tendencies take over. And if you
yep.
remember, back on LSD, a lot of people would get up on top of buildings and they think they could fly.
Right, right.
You see?
I think Art Linkletter's daughter was one of those.
Yeah.
I
yeah,
remember exactly.
Yeah, I remember that. And so that's the danger of these drugs. And when you start putting this in kids Dylan Klebo and Eric Harris over at Columbine, for example, they were on one of them was on Ritalin. The other one I think was I know one of them they were taking Ritalin, Effexor, and one other one like. I forget the name of it. I've got it around here somewhere. And so anyway, they were on these three different drugs over a period of time. And if they had started taking, let's say, I'm sure they didn't have it because it wasn't available on the street as much as it was, but if they were smoking angel dust, okay?
Right, right,
drinking
right.
and doing alcohol.
Right.
Eventually they'd have come to the same, you know, negative performance factor that they did when they started executing, you know, all these kids over at Columbine. Another way of getting there.
Yeah, I imagine from what I heard on the radio when you were talking to the good doctor, that a lot of these kids that have done these horrendous deeds in school were actually on drugs.
Yeah. Oh, they all were.
Yeah, and that's really amazing that it's so hidden.
Yeah,
I mean, there's not anything in the paper about Paxil. There's nothing in the paper about anything LSD. There's nothing in about anything. And it's just surprising to me that they would hide that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, they, you know, they haven't hid it from me. I've got I got the records right here from,
yes.
I got my records go back to 1999. I think it's like 17
right.
different incidents from 1999 up till now. And then we had after Stephen Kasmanak at Illinois a couple of weeks ago, we had another one after that.
Right.
Right out here
right.
in Pasadena, we had one. Yeah.
But we had one, a kid in Corning.
Oh, yeah,
I think
yeah,
he was
okay.
6-7 years old, killed somebody. Another
yeah.
student.
Yeah.
Just
out
incredible.
Here, I think we had 3 or 4 people shot. Yeah, it's Prozac, Ritalin, Luvox, Paxil are the main.
Right.
School shootings that this article that I have here
right,
in front of me.
Right.
And it started back in May 20, 99, a 15-year-old wounded 6 at Heritage High School in Conyers, Georgia, and that was the kid was on Ritalin.
Right.
And Sean Cooper, a 15-year-old, on April 16th. He wounds one of the kids back there, and he was medicated. It didn't say what drug he was on. And Eric Harris, Bill Klebo, of course, we know what he was on. Luvox. Yeah, Luvox was the other one. Luvox, Effexor, and Paxil.
Right.
Well, actually, I don't think it was on Paxil. I think it was Effexor, because I don't think Paxil was out yet. That was in 99.
Okay.
Now, Paxil came out a little later.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then that Jeff Kinkle, I remember the 15-year-old killed 4. That was down in Thurston in Springfield, Ohio, Oregon. He was on Prozac. Mitchell Johnson and that Andrew Gold in Arkansas, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Mitchell Johnson had problems even before up
mm-hmm.
in Wisconsin. He was when he was 11. He was had rape charges at 11 years old.
Yeah,
he was probably on top of that. Realizing these people are probably reincarnated, you know, as serial killers
mm-hmm.
from a past life anyway,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
even sets them on. That's probably why they're in so much pain, because they got that karma on their soul.
Yes,
that. That they can't live with themselves, you know. Back
yeah.
in World War II, when in the concentration camps, the SS would, which were the guards, they would go out and grab these Jewish kids, and then
uh-huh.
they'd bring them back into the concentration camp, and then they would give them Mohawk haircut, you know, like the
uh-huh.
Mohawk Indians had, and then
right.
they'd spray their head, their hair purple, and then they'd drive them around for a few weeks. Parading them through the prison camps and around through the local towns with his purple hair in groups.
Mm-hmm.
Then they take
mm-hmm.
them into a shower, like they're going to wash their hair off, and then they Zycon B and kill them.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
so then they reincarnated, and I think that's where a lot of these skinheads came from.
Yeah.
You know, from that. And then, of course, you put them on drugs, then you got, you know, skinhead killers.
Right.
And the same thing with the with these kids, like Eric, a couple of these kids were marksmen, they were shooting from a distance, like Mitchell, for example, was.
Yeah.
He was probably working for Hitler in the Hitler Youth Movement. And remember that when Berlin fell at Potsdam Park, when they had the last battle, they were fighting away over there, and the Russians came in. These are 14 and 15-year-old kids defending Hitler's bunker. He was already dead, but they didn't know it.
Yeah.
And there was no army left. The army was gone. The Wehrmacht was gone.
Right.
So then the Russians just came in and mutilated these kids. So they died under horrible circumstances. Well, they probably have an axe to grind, too, when they reincarnate.
Mm.
So it just goes on and on. You know, when you start looking at the psychological cause of why the depression is there in the first place, it's from a past
right.
life that's been very recent.
Right. It's incredible.
Yeah, at Paradigm, you know, years ago, we saw that this was coming. I saw this coming on the horizon back, oh God, in the 70s. Well,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I saw it in the early 70s because people would come out to me. I went to the National Health Federation then, and I'd do a lecture, and after a lecture, somebody would come up to me, and they'd say, you know, this guy's in this gray van, you know, have this antenna
right.
on the top of it, and they keep aiming it at my house, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and then they'd say, well, then they moved in. Then they moved in next door, and I get these horrible feelings from this. Well, you know, you're talking to some 85-year-old person or 90-year-old person, and you're hearing that, and you're thinking, well, this person's on medication, this person is senile, you know, they're making this up. It's just, you know, this couldn't be happening. That's what I thought. But then when I got the first time I ever heard it, I'll never forget, it was in Chicago, you know, right outside, you know, right in Chicago when we were doing it in Rosemont, where we used to do
right.
our shows once a year in the summertime.
Right.
And then I got down to Florida one day in Miami, and I did a show down there in Miami, and some people came up to me. Said the same thing. They didn't know each other. And these were just people that came to the gig, you know, to see everybody. And then I started traveling. Then I got up to Oregon. I got a lot of it up there, you know.
Yeah.
And I started, suddenly realized I got 50 people that don't know themselves who've told me the same thing. They're not making this up. That's what really set me off. That's why I invented Star Orb back then.
In the early days, did they use the antidepressants to control people too, you think?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
But the very early days, they used angel dust in a straight form.
Is that what they used?
Pyridine, cyclohexane. They used it direct.
Right.
It was directly used that way. And it was usually oftentimes done with an injection.
Okay.
And when the people were, when it got out of control, and you know, Colin Ross and I were talking about this.
Yes.
And he saw it come out of the Army like I did, out of the bio labs. And he named a couple other sources where he saw it and come out on the street. We both agreed it was never used as a tranquilizer. You remember when they used to say angel dust was used as an elephant tranquilizer?
Really?
Yeah, that's what the government said. This is where the stuff comes from. These kids are getting.
Yeah.
As they never tranquilized an elephant. Angel dust. There never one elephant even ever heard it, you know, saw it. They did have a, we talked about this last week, there was another derivative of it called ketamine,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't have the same papyridine radical in it that, it's a methyl papyridine radical that is in Paxil, and it's not in ketamine. It's got a small amount, but not the strong stuff. And so it gives you kind of a ketamine souped up becomes a love drug, you know. It's a liquid. You pour it in a drink, and girls get to that pour it in their drink, and they wake up the next day and they can't remember what happened.
Right.
I mean, whether they've been raped or not or whatever.
Right.
So that's the stuff that they use on animals.
Right.
But some variation of ketamine. Of course, the stuff they use on girls is made in a laboratory, whereas Searle, Don Rumsfeld's company, of course,
right,
makes the ketamine, and they also make the a lot of these other ingredients that, I mean, they also make Paxil and some of these other things.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's really in black and white when you see what's going on out there. It's not a mysterious thing anymore. There's just about any psychiatrist that's honest will tell you the same thing now. Before, they weren't aware of it, but people like Dr. Tracy, who's a PhD, who testified on the Andrea Yates trial,
mm-hmm.
and those kind of people have made it and even the FDA, according to Dr. Ross, even the FDA acknowledges that this stuff shouldn't be on the market.
Right.
The FDA is losing control of that. This is big pharma and the Federal Reserve people working together. You know, they're national bankers that control our cash flow and everything. They're the ones that are doing this, corporate world and the federal banks.
You were mentioning also about the satellite with which was very interesting about Atlantis and they did their sixth
1990,
mission.
Yeah, 1990. Yeah, that was
and,
the first.
And they just they,
yeah, that's
they,
the Misty series, and that's a NASA program called Operation Blue Light. Blue Light. Okay.
Yes, Operation Blue Light, and they put up a KH-1110, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's the one that just went up, I think, about 3-4 weeks ago, wasn't it, something like that?
Oh, yeah. You mean now, the recent stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The recent stuff is, where I really became aware of the recent stuff was Steven Seagal's movie, Under Siege 2.
Okay.
In that movie, they were on a train. The bad guys had taken over control of a satellite.
Mm-hmm.
They regained control of the satellite. And were blasting back at the train, you know, the government was. And the satellite that they were talking about was the early predecessor to the ones that we're talking about now that did mind control.
Wow.
That's what he stumbled on.
Wow.
I don't think even Steven Seagal had the full ramifications of and that, by the way, was his last movie he ever did with a studio. After that, he did all his stuff independently with a place where Wesley Snipes does his over there in Prague, in Czechoslovakia, on private money, because remember, some of these big studios are controlled by the government. Most of them are.
Right,
the government
is
built for him, so they wouldn't he didn't do any more. He's done a bunch of films since then, probably 10 more, but they're all on DVDs only.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. Now, I remember you said that you have a device. I think it's called a flamethrower.
Right, the flamethrower.
And I
think we're just now getting around to getting that up on the internet. We're just now getting around to getting a lot of new literature out on our stuff.
Okay.
We have several products that we've been selling, you know, kind of the Paradyn in crowd that I call them.
Right.
Because they're difficult to make, expensive. Most people can't afford them. But there are people that need them.
Mm-hmm.
And they find us, and then we put them out there.
Yeah. Right.
Flamethrower, they come in sets of four.
Okay.
And we first demonstrated that up in Dulce, New Mexico, back in 93, 92. It's right around the time that we were coming out with The Promise, the book called The Promise, whenever that was.
Right, that's a great book.
Because I went up there and we worked on the book at his house in Scottsdale, but then I went up to Dulce, New Mexico. And when I went up there, in 1990, you know. Yeah, I guess that's when it was. We went up there in the back. I had that old pickup truck, that old Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, old Ford F-250, big old truck. And we had a Semyasi had told me to build this device, you know, and test it, because we were going to need it for this later satellite stuff that was coming. And I realized I had no clue about satellite stuff coming then. You know, I didn't know what she was talking about. She knew.
Yeah.
So we put this funny looking thing together. It looks like a cross, a small one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a bunch of wires on it and it's electrical stuff and the coils. Now it has a lot more on it than it did then, because now I understand what it's supposed to do. It's just like the receptor line, you know. The receptors came out and we had four generations of redesign and retooling receptors to get them where they are today. And each time we got more definition, more focus, more energy out of them. So the same thing happened with that. So we get up there, and I go up to see Brad, and the Pleiadians are following me in their spaceship. And
wow.
Yeah, I'm having a telepathic contact, you know, and with them. And Frauke, who I was married to at the time, went with me. And then I picked up Ann Rainbow and her husband, Ken. She's an heiress living out in Santa Fe, which is near Dulce. She had one of our big systems and was a UFO, you know, freak. She'd seen lots of them from a great distance, great distance, more like twinkling lights.
Right.
I said, you're going to have a better experience than that when you come with me. So we went up there at 2 o'clock in the morning. We get up there. It took about 3 hours to drive from Santa Fe. So left out of there about, I don't know, 10. Got up there around 2 in the morning. Got positioned in the Apache Jicarilla River, which runs through there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're sitting down there on the edge of the river in the Indian reservation. I had a treaty with them at the time, so it was okay to, you know, go on and do this with Leroy Pespa, who was the chief. And so anyway, we're sitting there in this truck, and I said, as soon as I turned the engine off and the lights off, I said, Semyasi told me that there's going to be a spaceship fly at this truck, come right up to us in 14 minutes. So everybody says, okay, that's cool, you know. They were expecting a high, lofty sighting of some sort. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
They didn't expect in 14 minutes that a 22 or 23 foot spaceship flying 10 feet off the ground would fly right up the river, right at the front of the truck, come straight at it about 500 miles an hour.
Right.
And stop about 25 or 30 feet away. It's about the level of the hood, you know, and hover.
Wow.
That really got their attention, you know.
I bet so.
And I remember there was a crack in the windshield of the truck, and it got bigger that night. White, foggy stuff in it. But anyway, that thing in the back started buzzing.
Right.
And the flamethrower. And so it started buzzing. And
amazing.
Yeah, and so as it was buzzing, the ship started changing color. It was kind of a dirty neon color when it got there. And it turned to kind of a dirty reddish-brown color. You know, kind of like, almost like a blood clot kind of energy coming out of it.
Right.
And I could sense the grays inside of it. freaking out, and so
really?
Did everybody else, you know.
Wow.
Anne's husband, Ken, I think he almost peed his pants. I mean, it scared him so much. He was visibly shook up.
Mm.
And so the thing made a couple of badass stops, a couple of badass turns, you know, zigzags in front of the truck. This thing is like humming in the back. It's going, you know, something is bouncing off of it, some negative energy. Because, you know, when you go up there, the kids won't even go out of town at night because they're afraid they'll get abducted. There's like half the tribe, their children got abducted. Of course, you don't hear it in the news. The news don't care and don't believe them, and the government could care less anyway.
Right.
But so anyway, these guys are up there probably going to try to do something to us, but there's nothing they could do because that thing was in the back. So it kind of took off.
Wow.
That's how we discovered it. And that was the first opening round of that technology. It's a lot more advanced now.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
I can imagine. The electronic sabotage, that was really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you were also discussing electronic sabotage and harassment, which was really incredible.
Yeah, the harassment, the first time I ever got into that, you know, was out here in California back in the very late 70s, very early 80s, working with Andrew Paharich and a couple other guys that were pretty well known in the, you know, New Age stuff.
Right.
And evidently they'd assembled a box, and these restaurant owners were using it, these Italian restaurants, believe it or not, and there was like 16 of them or something. And they were using these ELF generators, electronic harassment generators,
right,
in the restaurants to make people agitated, and their alcohol sales like tripled.
Wow.
Yeah. So they were getting customers to drink a lot. And I actually went to a couple of these places, and you could feel something weird going on.
That's where
it started for me. I mean, I don't know. It could start for somebody else somewhere else. I became aware of all this stuff. And that's when we started creating anti-ELF devices.
This was during
the very beginning of the receptor at that time. Because the receptor, when you wear it, makes the aura field, the electronic field of the body, somewhat able to process this energy. It doesn't make it go away, but it allows you to process it, and it becomes harmless.
Okay.
And usually it goes away because whoever's sending it realizes it's not doing anything and they're wasting their time.
Wow.
And that's one of the reasons why the receptor's been so successful. Another device that's really good with it is MicroStar. And that's a device that we put in a briefcase, small briefcase, it's not a medium-sized briefcase. And when you're on the road, you get a lot of ELF when you go into hotels. In the room.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you set this up in your hotel room, it allows you to have the comfort and the feeling that you had back at your house before you left.
Right.
Yeah, and so as a result of that, that's pretty cool. Then we have another device that gets rid of that energy. It's called a Firestar Orb. It's very large.
Firestar.
It's like a great big microstar, but instead of being 17 inches across, this thing is almost 7 feet across.
That's incredible.
About 6.5 feet. And it's huge. Mm-hmm. And it goes up on the wall, and that redirects that energy, but it also allows you to transmit your auric frequencies out into space and make contact with extraterrestrials and other people doing the same thing.
Mm.
It's a device that works on a principle similar to what the Andromedans use to communicate between their spaceships and the Pleiadians between their spaceships over great light your distances instantaneously. This is, of course, now when you get into this, you're getting into the quantum entanglement stuff that we do here, which leads into the projector field.
Right.
I'll tell you, though, all this stuff was like Stargate and way out there for people.
Yeah.
But with all the books out there on all these things that I talk about that people have been writing the last 4 or 5 years, the market's getting more and more full of them. People are starting to realize that, hey, that Paradigm Company, there's a reason it's been around for 33 years. They put out some cool stuff, and it works.
Well, you're doing some amazing things out there, Fred.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm doing it, but the equipment's doing it. But I had a lot of help developing all this, you know. And people don't realize it either, that for every one machine that we have that's successful, we probably had four failures, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It doesn't just come out like magic. And
right.
And to build the, it took us 10 years to make the first receptor. The thing was conceived back in the 70s when the company started, but there was nothing we could do to make it. It wasn't possible. Technology wasn't here.
No. I certainly love my nuclear receptor. I've got, I put an 18-karat gold with platinum and diamonds, and it's so fantastic. I mean, the energy that it's just fabulous. I mean, it just clears the body like nothing I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
Just fabulous.
It's pretty amazing, I think.
Yeah. Do you remember the first time I called and I was telling you I was getting a lot of black out of my back?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I was actually taking a walk out in the country, and I was having a lot of black pouring out my back, and I called you. I said, Fred, I see something amazing happening, and I have a lot of black just pouring out of my back. This is when I was wearing my receptor, and I still am. And you said, well, that's all the X-rays that are leaving your body. And I said, that's fabulous.
Yeah, it's an actual dark matter release. So,
yep.
When you look at science, was able to determine a lot of the age of the Big Bang universe. You know, it's estimated 16 billion years.
Mm-hmm.
And according to their theories, some of the theories that some of these guys came up with, if you got up three, you know, at a certain point, the X-ray should be released. There was the EMP pulse, the X-ray, and then all the nuclei of the atoms, all that stuff came,
mm-hmm.
which formed suns and all that kind of stuff. But the X-ray activity started about 340 light years out. That's where
right,
it would be
right.
if their calculations were right.
Right.
Coming back, actually.
Right.
So when they started making measurements, they found that 340 light years out, a lot of X-rays were coming back here to the Earth.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and that kind of verified that theory of the Big Bang. I'm trying to remember the scientist that found that out. It was in the last 50 years it was done
with
the Science of Radio Telescopes. But then they look at dark matter and dark energy.
Hello?
Yeah, we got a caller.
Yes, hello.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Who is this?
This is Eve, Fred.
How are you doing, Eve?
Fine, how are you?
Yeah, that's Eve in El Toro.
Yeah, Lake Forest, yeah, El Toro, yeah.
Yeah, Lake Forest.
Yeah,
what's Eve up to?
I wanted to ask you about Morgellon, what you thought about that. You have any solution for that one?
Yeah, we do, and the thing about Morgellon's disease, so people want to know what that is a disease where they were experimenting around. Now, it was all experimenting with implants. Now, for a long time, they were abducting people and putting implants in, but now the technology is getting even beyond that where the abductions aren't necessary anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So in the process of doing this implanting, a lot of mistakes occurred, leaving almost what you would call an electronic virus in the system, into the brain and the body. And so this electronic virus will take the trace minerals and create an electrolysis process wherein different colored fibers are produced and different little pieces of mass. Like it's like if you had a little transistor, a little integrated circuit, and you put it in a alcohol solution, and you just crushed it with a pair of pliers, you'd have a lot of little parts floating around in the alcohol solution. And that's what, you know, instead of the alcohol solution, it's the human blood, so in the immune system. So what happens is these people end up sweating out this stuff, and in the process of doing it, fibers start, you know, growing out of the, because it basically is an electronic seed that feeds off a protein, so, and of course trace minerals, and other minerals. So as a result, you end up, you know, it's like that little, what do they call it, the little chi thing, a little clay animal, and you put water on it, the grass starts growing out of it.
About
the same process, you know. And here's a piece of clay, and grass suddenly starts coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah, so the cure for that is to change the frequency of the body such that it internalizes and eats up all of these electronic viruses that are in there.
Do you know what frequency would work?
Well, it's a bunch of different frequencies. It's the full spectrum of the mineral spectrum, which is from hydrogen on up. So it's a whole bunch of different frequencies. And what we use is trace minerals and a lot of our different things like the receptor and sleeping in pyramids and all that kind of stuff to change the entire frequency of the human DNA.
I've been using a silver.
Also colloidal silvers will help. You know, a lot of different electrolyte products will work, but they have to be of a certain frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And gold? What about gold? I also take gold.
Well, gold by itself is fine, but I mean, it's not going to do anything. It's nothing more. You know, it's like washing your dishes. Gold is like the soap, but you still need the water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the hot water, you know, to wash the grease off.
Right, I understand. There's soap.
So it's
like
an ingredient in the detergent, but it's not the actual answer.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I've presented this. I've emailed the Morgellon Foundation. I guess one of their directors just died
mm-hmm.
recently. But I haven't got a response because they don't understand it. They're trying to approach it from a bacterial standpoint.
Right.
And that's not what it is.
Have you got a paper on it or something?
Have I got what?
A paper on it that I could get from you?
I haven't written anything on it,
no. You haven't written anything?
I may write something in my book. I've been so busy with this other stuff that I haven't. It's one area.
Because a lot of people have it.
A lot of people have it, but they don't even know they have it. As soon as I get some patients in here that want to really do something about it, I had a lady nearby in Dana Point that we were going to work with, but a lot of these people, when you start to work with them, they get cold feet. And most of them that have come to me so far with it have had such bad luck with the therapies that have been used on them that they don't give me the chance to really help them.
Well, some people have killed themselves over it.
Yeah, I'm sure they have.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have.
Because
it will eventually create, when that stuff gets in your brain, it's going to cause depression.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a pretty nasty little thing. There was a doctor down in Santa Ana that was working on it.
Very familiar with it.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the doctor in Santa Ana that was working on it?
No, I haven't worked with him.
Yeah, I believe he's a chemist or a biochemist or something like that. And, he was working on it, and they had figured out, and they sent it to a lab.
Yeah.
And the lab came back and said, it's definitely man-made.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely man-made, and it's robotic.
Yeah, of course. That's why I said it's an electronic virus.
I heard you. Yeah, I know. Yeah, you were right on target. This is what the lab picked up.
Yeah, no, I know what it is. I'm not, until I get somebody that's actually, not afraid of to work with it, I'm powerless. And I've got plenty of people, met plenty of problems to deal with without recruiting anybody, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Well, thank you.
We're out of time anyway. But we got to get off the air here, Steve. I've got to shut you down now. It's 6:56. So you've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show at bbsradio.com, the only .com with a radio attached to it that's really worth listening to. Yeah, you've made this the biggest show on BBS, which we appreciate. And I want to announce that this will be up on our front page, but on April 4th, we have the honor of having Dr. Michio Kaku come on our show. He is probably the most famous theoretical cosmologist in the world. He works with Stephen Hawking. He worked with Dr. Edward Teller. He's a professor at the New York University. He received a Bachelor of Science from Harvard University in 1968. He worked with Berkeley, University of California at Berkeley. He got a PhD in 72, and he has a lectureship at Princeton. The guy is amazing. He has the Henry Sama Chair at the Professors of Theoretical Physics at the City College of New York, where he's been teaching for 25 years. And He's pretty amazing. He works with global warming, nuclear power. I've got his newest book right here, Physics of the Impossible, a scientific exploration into the world of phasers, force fields, teleportation, and time travel. Now, you guys think I'm far out with all this stuff. Here's a guy that's probably going to go up and get a Nobel Peace Prize for his work in string theory. He's a co-founder of string theory, which every physicist knows about it. He's coming on this show, and we're real excited about him coming on here. looking at his filmography, he did We Are the Guinea Pigs in 80, Borders, Synthetic Pleasures, Einstein Revealed, Future Fantastic, Stephen Hawking's Universe, Bioperfection, Building a Human Race, Exodus Earth, Me and Isaac Newton, Nova, The Elegant Universe, Space, The Final Junkyard, Big Questions, Parallel Universes, Horizon, Hawking, Screen. I mean, he goes on and on and on. This guy is really, really, really there. And so we're going to be real excited to have him on. He's going to be touring out here. I'll be back in New York on the end of the month, and he'll be out here at Caltech giving a lecture. Goes to Berlin. His book comes out next week, and it's available at all the bookstores. So you're going to want to check this guy out, even if you haven't. He does coast to coast. He's got his own radio show in 156 countries. I mean, we're talking some. We're real proud to have somebody like Michio Kaku come on our network. It's a big feather in the BBS radio cap. So anyway, that'll be up on the front page. We're going to put his schedule up there, so he's going to be at some different planetariums and going to be at some big colleges doing some lectures, so you might want to catch him. He's also been on Larry King and Good Morning America and Nightline and CNN. And I mean, we're talking a guy that's a lot of fun. He's like Dr. Fred Bell on steroids, so you want to watch for that show. Of course, tonight we had Stephen Barish on, who's just as fun as ever. Stephen's on the lighter side, and he gets right down to he asks the down-home and dirty questions that everybody needs to ask out there that I don't think of that really need to be asked. So with that, I guess we're rolling on out of here. I'm going to get – I got my Mai Tai coming. I got my birds handling, and we're just going to be rolling on out. So we'll have a nice show, a can show for you tomorrow night, and we'll see you next Friday night. BBS Radio, Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show.
Se levanta con el sueño en los ojos. Fresco.